Middle East and Africa.
Israel and Hezbollah. History repeating. Hezbollah seems to have miscalculated in its fight with Israel.
Warlords are not known for their remorse, but Hassan Nasrallah offered some in 2006, weeks after a war that killed more than 1,100 Lebanese. The fighting began when Hezbollah, the Shia militia and political party he leads, abducted two Israeli soldiers in a raid. Mr. Nasrallah said he was surprised by the ferocity of the response and called the raid a mistake. "If I had known that the operation would lead to such a war, would I do it? I say no, absolutely not," he told an interviewer. This time was meant to be different. Hezbollah started firing rockets at Israel on October 8th to support Gaza, which Israel had begun bombing after Hamas, a Palestinian militant group, massacred more than 1,100 Israelis one day earlier. It did not force Israel to end its war, but it tied up soldiers and missile defense batteries and forced 60,000 Israeli civilians to flee their homes. Anxious to avoid a two-front battle, the Israeli army responded in kind with short-range artillery and airstrikes. Both sides followed these unwritten rules for months, neither stopping nor escalating. Yet it now appears that Mr. Nasrallah had miscalculated again. What was meant to remain a limited conflict has become much bigger. In the past 2 weeks, Israel has dealt Hezbollah the harshest blow in the group's four-decade history. Mr. Nasrallah seems at a loss for how to proceed. The shift in Israel's tactics began in July when it assassinated Fuad Shuka, Hezbollah's military chief in Beirut, a retaliation for a Hezbollah missile that killed 12 children in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. It was also a chance to change the dynamics of a conflict that had seemed frozen for months. Hezbollah sought to hit back in late August, but Israel blew up its long-range missiles before they launched. On September 17th, Israel detonated thousands of pagers used by Hezbollah operatives. The next day, hundreds of walkie-talkies exploded. The sabotaged devices killed dozens, wounded thousands, and wreaked havoc on Hezbollah's communications. The timing of the blasts may not have been dictated entirely by Israel. Its spies worried that Hezbollah would soon discover the sabotage. But they were followed rapidly by a series of assassinations. One killed the commander of the Radwan force, Hezbollah's elite commando unit. Then came a withering campaign of airstrikes in southern Lebanon and the eastern Bekaa Valley, both Hezbollah strongholds. Israel's attacks killed almost 500 people in the second wave on September 23rd, the deadliest day in Lebanon since the end of its long civil war in 1990. Having mostly attacked missile launchers in non-populated areas, Israel is now hitting ones in villages and other built-up areas. Israeli officials insist this is not yet an all-out war. They have drawn up plans for a ground invasion, but the army has not deployed troops to staging areas, nor has the Air Force started bombing vital infrastructure in Lebanon. The airport was one of Israel's first targets in 2006. Unlike in Gaza, where they vow the total defeat of Hamas, Israeli generals acknowledge it is impossible to end Hezbollah's dominance in Lebanon. Their goal is narrower, to force Hezbollah to halt its fire on northern Israel and withdraw its men from the border. Mr. Nasrallah insists that will not happen. In a speech on September 19th, he vowed to continue fighting Israel until the latter ends its war in Gaza, a promise he has made often over the past year. His militia has gradually used longer-range missiles, firing at cities like Haifa and Afula, deeper inside Israel. On September 25th, it launched a long-range ballistic missile at Tel Aviv, the first time that it had aimed at Israel's commercial capital. The missile was intercepted by David's Sling, an Israeli missile defense system. It was an escalation, but firing a single missile seemed mostly symbolic, a way for Hezbollah to demonstrate that some of its capabilities were still intact, not the debilitating response that many had expected. Mr. Nasrallah has never been so isolated. He has lost many trusted lieutenants, some of whom have been members of Hezbollah since its founding in the 1980s. Those who remain are probably suspects. Israel could not have carried out extensive sabotage and assassinations without inside help. His communications are disrupted and some of his missiles have been destroyed. Hezbollah's reputation is in tatters. Its Shia constituents long saw it as a mighty protector. Now they have doubts. Among the wider population, many are furious with Mr. Nasrallah for dragging the country into a fight he cannot win. Lebanon is still grappling with one of the worst economic crises in modern history. Since 2019, its currency has lost 98% of its value and GDP has dropped by half. It can ill afford a long war, let alone the reconstruction bill after one. The displacement of tens of thousands of people from the south and east is already straining basic services. Some landlords are charging vast sums to rent homes to evacuees or refusing to accept them all. All of this is important to Hezbollah, but arguably none of it matters so much as the opinion of Iran, its main sponsor. The Islamic Republic invested billions of dollars to build up Hezbollah's missile stocks, including a concerted effort in recent years to upgrade their accuracy. They were meant to serve as an insurance policy against a direct Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. Now Iran is watching in dismay as those same missiles are blown up. It seems unwilling to help its proxy. That fits a pattern of inaction over the past year. Iran worries about inviting more attacks on its soil and that it too has been penetrated by the Mossad, Israel's foreign intelligence service. Some officials in Lebanon muse that Iran might seek to use Hezbollah as a bargaining chip. It could offer to restrain the group in exchange for a deal that eases sanctions on Iran's battered economy. The Biden administration has been willing to let Israel test its belief that Hezbollah can be pounded into a separate truce. It says it will not support a ground invasion of Lebanon, however. But Israeli generals continue to threaten one. On September 25th, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, the army chief, told soldiers training in northern Israel that their boots will enter enemy territory. Later that day, America joined 10 other countries and the EU in calling for a 21-day ceasefire between Hezbollah and Israel. They hope to use that time to implement UN Resolution 1701, the deal that ended the 2006 war, which called for Hezbollah to withdraw to the Litani River, 30 kilometres, that's 19 miles, north of the Israeli border. Israeli officials say they are willing to discuss the proposal, though many will be sceptical about giving Hezbollah a 3-week respite in exchange for the promise of further negotiations. Whether Mr. Nasrallah will agree is open for debate. Backing down would boost his standing among Lebanese. He could say he did it for the good of the nation, says one diplomat. Iran probably wants him to hold his fire as well, although its leaders may not give such an order directly. Yet to do so would be humiliating for Mr. Nasrallah. He has spent years touting a concept he calls the unity of the arenas, the idea that Iran's proxies across the region could coordinate joint military action against Israel. For Hezbollah, Iran's strongest proxy, to abandon the fight under Israeli fire would be to admit that the concept has failed. If he digs in, the fighting could get much worse. Hezbollah has lost some of its arsenal to Israeli bombardment, but still has tens of thousands of rockets and missiles. Israel could expand its strikes in Hezbollah's stronghold in South Beirut, a neighbourhood it reduced to rubble in 2006. Neither side would achieve its goals. Israel would not end its war in Gaza, and residents of northern Israel would not feel safe to return home. A truce might be embarrassing for Mr. Nasrallah, but the alternative is a ruinous and pointless war.